everyone, people of the interwebs, welcome to Season 2, Episode 22, otherwise known as Episode number 47 of the Reverent Babble Podcast. This is Cody Kelly.
Hey, 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 it's Neil Huntley.
And we're just so happy that you've come back to join us for yet another episode of Reverent Babble.
Yes, sir.
So, Neil's back from vacation.
Yep, uh-huh.
Neil's, yep. Neil's back from vacation, so you don't have to hear me talk for an hour.
Back to the real world.
Right. Right. Yeah, I know.
We were beach bums for a week and a half.
A week and a half. Yeah, I was about to say.
We're happy to be back. First day back, you're kind of dragging a little bit. Like, we're recording this on at 10 o'clock in the morning, so I'm still somewhat trying to wake up, even though I've been up since 6 o'clock this morning. But that's what happens when you got a two-year-old.
Yeah.
But we had a really good week and a half. We were at Holden Beach for a week, and then we were at North Myrtle from Saturday to Wednesday, which was yesterday as we're talking right now.
Right, nice.
And, yeah, we really, literally were beach bums every day. I mean, we'd go on the beach in the morning until Graham was ready to go in. Then he would lunch and take a nap, and then we'd either go do something fun or go to the beach again. So, I mean, we were all over the place. We had a good time, and somehow
that's good.
I ate like a pig for a week and a half and only gained 2 pounds. So I was
wow, pretty impressive.
Yeah, I guess it's just when I'm at the beach, I can do whatever, I can eat whatever I want and not blow up like a balloon. But if I did all that at the house, I would have gained 15 pounds in a week and a half.
Right, exactly.
But we had a really good time. Spent some really good time with our families, both Amber's side and my side.
That's good.
And it was much needed and much appreciated, and I always enjoy when we can get away for that little bit like that.
But oh, for sure.
Back to the real world, hitting the ground running, getting this done this morning, Thursday morning, then starting work with my father-in-law on Friday.
Nice.
And I'll be doing that till we start at North Point in July. So it's
nice, man.
So I mean once it's like welcome back from vacation, here's all your responsibilities again.
Here's all your work again. Yep.
That's right. So but it's a good thing. We all need vacations like that, but mentally we all need to get back in routines at the same time too. And
right,
you know,
for sure.
Like Graham, he didn't want to leave the beach yesterday. Who would want to leave the beach, right?
Right, of course.
So, but I had to tell him, just like everything else, we have to leave so we can come back, you know. Just like we had to come back and get in our routines, and he went to daycare this morning, and he was kind of reluctant to go at first
because he's like, no, I don't get to go to the water.
He's been around us for a week and a half, you know.
Yeah.
Every day. And so, but he'll get back in his routine too, and we'll all have a good time. So,
right.
Yes, sir. But that's,
well, that's pretty awesome,
that's
man.
Really
that's
just
good.
A summary of what we did. We ate good food and sat on the beach for a week and a half. But,
nice.
But yeah, man, but we had a good time. So, well, what's new with you, man?
Well, let's see. This past weekend, while you were at the beach, this past week, you know, / weekend, you know, because it took place for this long, Wingate University's baseball team went to the national championship.
Yes, sir.
Up in Cary, North Carolina, and they ended up winning the national championship.
Yep, as a 6 seed, right?
As a 6 seed in the tournament, and we actually lost our first game in the national tournament.
Right.
And then, you know, in the way it works in the Division II is that, you know, it's the top 8 teams are in the national championship, the winners of each region in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point on, it's a double elimination tournament in the national tournament. So we lost our first game, so, you know, if we lost a game, we were going home. And then we won 5 straight games.
To win it all.
To win the national championship as a 6 seed, and we actually ended up being the 1 seed to win the national championship.
Yeah, did you see their overall record? That was, what, Southeast Missouri? Is that who it was?
Central Missouri.
One of the compass destinations, you know, directions.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure they only lost like 7 or 8 games all year.
Yes. I think their record after the tournament, they only had like 8 losses all year.
Yeah.
And what was funny is they had lost that previous day, was their first loss. So it was kind of funny because both teams had a completely different story of making it there because, you know, we lost our first game, had to win all those games to get here, and they just won all their games up until the previous game before, or 2 games before.
Right.
And they were playing against Tampa University, or mm-hmm. University of Tampa, whatever. And then they lost to them, and then they had to play Tampa again, and then the winner of that went to play us in the World Series. And then, of course, they won that, but that was their first loss in like a 15-game win streak.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they won like 20 or last 21 or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, up until that loss to Tampa the day before they played us in the national championship, they won like 15 in a row, and like you said, like 20 of their last 21 or something, and then they played us and obviously lost us in the national championship. Dude, it was crazy there. There were like, I mean, I bet you there was like 2,000 people there.
So did you get to go? Were you at the game?
I was there in person. I went there in person, and I got to see the game with – I went to the game on Saturday with my dad, and we got to see them win the national championship in person.
Awesome.
And that was really awesome to see. And, of course, you know, that's the school's first ever national championship in baseball.
Yep.
And it's the school as a whole. It's their second.
Second one with the men's soccer winning the other one.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. In, like, 2015 or 16 mm-hmm. or something, I think it's when the soccer team won it. But, yeah, you know, that was definitely really cool to see. And, of course, you know, while you're there, you get to see a whole bunch of, you know, former coaches and players, you know, and even players, you know, that were on the team when I was first there in my freshman, sophomore years, you know.
Yep.
You know, the guys who had already left, I got to talk to them and parents and stuff like that. You know, so it was obviously a really cool experience, you know, plus two, Cary only being a little over 2 hours away.
Yeah, it's not a bad drive at all.
Mm-mm. A drive there was not bad at all. Yeah, like you said, it definitely wasn't a bad drive, and that obviously helped, you know, for us, you know, being able to go. But, I mean, you know, just being able to go there and experience that was definitely a lot of fun, and we really enjoyed that, and we're definitely looking forward to seeing what happens for sure with that. But really, other than that, though, I've just been, you know, working on college forms for Wingate and all the really boring stuff that no one really wants to talk about. You know, so Wingate winning the national championship was definitely a huge event that happened in the last week and a half and,
sure,
all that kind of stuff. That was a lot of fun. Plus, too, I got to see the Red Sox beat your Braves twice in
the
round.
I know. Last night was a brutal one.
Yeah.
I'll mention that real quick because I knew we took the lead. We were down like 5-3.
Yeah.
We took the lead 8-6. And then,
well, it's,
what's
well,
his name on your team, hit a 467-foot home run, Grand Slam.
Yes, that would be one Mr. Christian Arroyo.
Wow.
Who, to be honest, up until he played for us, didn't really get much of a chance to play in the big leagues. He played a little bit with San Francisco. That was like the bulk of his career, and that was like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So,
I went to bed last night just because I was so tired, you know. I mean, you have a week and a half at the beach and then drive 3 hours home and then have church afterwards, too. I was very much tired. So
I checked
the score as I was getting in bed and saw that we had just tied it up 6-6.
Yes.
And I was like, I can't stay up for this. And now I woke up this morning and saw the Grand Slam highlight, and I was like, oh, dadgum. So, that was crazy. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, what was funny about that series is something, you know, we'll talk about in sports a little bit, but it was funny because really both the games in the series were like, the Red Sox had the lead early, the Braves came back and tied it up or took the lead, and then the Red Sox came back late and took the lead back late and won. You know, like both games in that series were like that. I just find it so funny that both the games were played so similar, and even the final scores were really similar too. Even the final scores were, you know, both kind of high scoring games or higher scoring games than usual. So,
right,
you know, I thought it was funny. Both games were basically the same thing, just two nights in a row.
So we both had classic "What's New with You." I went on vacation, and you watched baseball.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, man, pretty much.
Well, cool deal. Well, I'm excited to get this episode rolling. Yeah, I know you got the Devo this week. We'll talk some sports, including a certain LaMelo Ball getting Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
We'll talk about how Kyle Larson is still good at racing. And we will talk some baseball, too, about some sticky situations, let's say that.
Yeah.
And I guess I can go ahead and tell them, Cody.
Okay.
This is our last regular episode, right?
Yes, it is.
Next week will be the series finale.
The series finale,
Reverend,
yes.
Babel. Just because you're getting busy with school and you're taking on some responsibilities with the national champion baseball team over at Wingate. And I'll be working on projects with my father-in-law and getting ready for Caswell and getting ready for a new job at North Point about a month. And so it's just getting really busy for us. And we love y'all and we appreciate y'all listening. But, you know, sometimes when stuff gets busy, we got to, you know, let hobbies just kind of move on. And it's been a good ride. But we'll talk about all that stuff next week.
Absolutely, man.
We won't get all sentimental this week just yet.
Right.
So we'll leave them hanging with that. And we'll get on with our double play Devo. You ready?
I'm ready, man. Let's go.
All right, cool.
All right, and we're back. Welcome to this week's Double Play Devo. And for this week's Devo, Neil, I actually wanted to start it off by reading a verse, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, you know, just kind of change things up. I kind of wanted to start it by reading a verse first, and then we'll kind of get into kind of the meat of the discussion today.
Okay.
So the verse I wanted to read out of is out of Galatians chapter 5, verse number 7. And it says, "You ran well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth?" New King James Version.
Okay.
And I understand, you know, that's kind of a I'm trying to think of the right word, ominous question, mm-hmm. kind of a question, you know, kind of makes you think about for a minute,
yeah.
you know, kind of what that means and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. So, you know, so kind of basically after reading that verse, it's kind of like, okay, you ran well, so who hindered you from obeying the truth? So kind of what I wanted to do is when I saw this verse, I kind of wanted to look at the context of the verse.
Sure.
You know, kind of the backstory yeah. of, you know, obviously, you know, who Paul's writing to, what's their situation like right now, and why would he say something like that to them? You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, well, obviously Paul talks in metaphors a lot. Yeah, I think that's the right word for it, right?
Yeah.
I was about to say, is it a metaphor or a simile? I mean, like...
It's one of those.
One of those English words I don't know. I'm sorry, Amber, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But anyway, so, you know, Paul uses that figure of speech. We'll just say that.
Yes.
As, you know, because obviously you're not physically running, but... He means running, like going through our Christian walk and, you know, going through our life, you know, being followers of Christ. And here he's obviously speaking to the Galatians, you know, because it's in, you know, Galatians,
yeah.
obviously. You know, Paul says that they were running well, or they ran well, you know, which means, you know, they got saved and fired up. They were talking to people about Jesus, you know, living the Christian life. You know, and then something happened. They stumbled. They went through difficult circumstances. Obviously, Paul doesn't go in depth as to what, you know, they were going through specifically, because I'm sure it was different with everybody.
Right.
You know, which is the same with us. You know, we all go through different, you know, me and you have grown up in church our whole lives, and we've heard the word going through a season right mm-hmm. now. You know, we've heard that term a lot.
Right.
You know, and basically what I've interpreted that as meaning is, you know, we're just going through a time right now where this is going on. Usually when people say it's a bad thing, you know, it's a difficult circumstance, you know, but there's good seasons and bad seasons mm-hmm. too at the same time. You know, there's good times or good experiences that we have in our lives, you know, and then there's the ones, you know, where things are hard and difficult and we just don't know what we're supposed to do next. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that to me, I feel is the context of what Paul is talking about here, because it's like, okay, you know, you guys are on fire. You're running well, you're doing really good stuff, you know, and then something really hard just happened to y'all. You know, like, y'all are just going through really difficult circumstances right now. You know, something happened in your personal life, maybe you stumbled, or something happens, you know, outside, you know, just things like that. And the same thing happens with us too. You know, we'll go through times in our lives where, you know, we're going through good times and everything's going good, and, you know, then we'll go through some times where, you know, we're not really sure about, you know, what's going on in our situations, you know, and, you know, and we're not sure of what's going to happen because of the circumstances we're facing. And when that happens, you know, that obviously hinders us from, you know, being able to do what God's called us to do. But also when that happens, you know, we, you know, because, you know, we're people, we try to find other things, you know, to satisfy us or make us feel better because of those situations, you know, obviously, you know, wherever that may be, we might do that. Or on the other hand, we might feel like we've messed up in some way because, oh man, well, if I hadn't done this, and, you know, I wouldn't be going through this right now,
right.
or whatever. So we'll then start to, you know, try to earn God's favor back by saying, you know, like, I'm going to go out and do this stuff, and, you know, maybe God will feel better about me or whatever, and, you know, these circumstances will turn around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously that's not true, you know, because we don't earn our way to heaven by our works, and both of us know as Christians, the Christian life is not easy at all.
No, it's not.
And there are just times where we're going to go through a lot of difficult, hard struggles, you know, because of our faith, or just because, you know, that's just how life is too. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when stuff like that happens, you know, we obviously, you know, feel like, you know, we need to earn God's favor and get that stuff back sometimes, you know, but that's not the case, you know, because God loves us no matter what. You know, there are a bunch of verses in the Bible that say, you know, how much God loves us. You know, he loved us enough, you know, to give his own son for us to die on the cross. You know, like it says in John 3:16, you know, so, you know, we
right.
can be saved. You know, God loves us that much. So, you know, basically what I'm trying to say is we don't have to do more to earn God's love. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to change, you know, what we're doing just to earn God's love, because God already loves us enough. And obviously there are times where we'll mess up, or just, like I said earlier, bad things will happen. You know, difficult circumstances will happen. And that doesn't mean God loves us any less. You know, he already loves us more than, you know, anyone else in the world ever will. And he's already given us what we need to fight off those difficult circumstances as well. And that kind of leads me to another verse I want to read, which is in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And, I mean, you know, obviously reading the whole passage of 7 through 10, or is a really good passage in itself. I kind of want to focus on verse 9, but I kind of want to read the whole passage of 7 through 10, and then we'll kind of focus on verse 9 a little bit after that too. So, again, this is 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 through 10, and it says, "And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger to Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me." And then this is verse 9. "And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." And then verse 10 says, "Therefore, I take pleasure in my infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, I am strong." I'm also strong. So, you know, and I just felt like that was a perfect passage, too, for what we were talking about. Because, you know, it's like I mentioned at, you know, it's like I mentioned at the start. We all go through difficult circumstances. And, you know, kind of like what this was talking about in the beginning, the first verse in Galatians, what is hindering us or what's holding us back, mm-hmm. or what's stopping us from, you know, doing what God has called us to do. And obviously, you know, we go through difficult circumstances and those are really hard to deal with. But like I said earlier, we just have to remember that God loves us so much and that his grace is sufficient for us that we can overcome any circumstance that we go through. So instead of trying to find other things to satisfy us and take our mind off the bad stuff, or try to find our way to earn back favor with God, you know, because, you know, we may think that's the case, even though it's not. What we should do instead is just look inside and just look at ourselves. You know, we just need to look at ourselves and look at our situations that's going on. You know, obviously, you know, we need to find out what that is that's hindering us and stopping us from doing what God has called us to do. But most of the time, in the grand scheme of things, it's us. Mm-hmm. We're the ones stopping ourselves from doing what God has called us to do. We need to look at ourselves and just realize that, hey, this situation I'm going through is really tough. And, you know, and this is obviously something I want to mention, you know, just because, I mean, obviously we all go through difficult stuff. And I'm not saying, you know, that all the stuff that we go through is like, oh man, it ain't no big deal, you know, whatever, you know, you just, you know, push through it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because I know it's a lot more difficult than that.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, all the struggles that we go through in our life are just ways that we can, are just part of our testimony that we can share with other people, and we can overcome those things and say, hey, this is how God worked in my life. And it shows God's love that we mentioned earlier, and it shows that his grace is sufficient for us and that he loves us enough that he'll help us through those tough times. So instead of worrying about how we're going to get out of the situation, we need to find out what the situation is, look inside, and then look at what's hindering us in this race, you know, because, you know, Paul's talking about running. You know, look at this race known as life, find out what's hindering us from doing what God has called us to do, put our confidence in God's love and his grace to overcome that, and then once we do all that, we'll be able to run that race with confidence, knowing that even though it's difficult, God's always there to love us and support us and to be our anchor through those circumstances and hard times. So basically, I just wanted to say that even though we go through a lot of hard times and there are things that hinder us from being able to honor God in every single circumstance, which obviously that's, you know, we're not perfect and we're going to mess up in doing that sometimes. And there are hard things that are going to happen, you know, to us to hinder us from doing that. But it's about trusting in God's love and overcoming those circumstances by putting your trust in that love and that fact that he'll always be with you no matter what, despite the circumstances, and to be able to overcome whatever's, you know, holding us down and being able to share the love of Christ with other people as well.
Yeah, I like those points you bring up, and I kind of thought of too as you were talking too that kind of go exactly with what you were talking about. Yeah, like when you talked about sometimes we need to look inside and address what we have going on in our life.
Right.
And we had to think, well, is this glorifying God or is this glorifying me? You know?
Right, exactly.
And if it's glorifying me or, you know, you, whoever, you know, from, depending on how you're listening to me.
Yeah.
So, for example, I'll look in my life. Is what I'm doing in this situation glorifying God more or glorifying me more? If it's glorifying me more, I need to either fix it in that situation or I need to cut it off. Okay?
Right.
Simple as that. There's two options. You either reverse it and glorify God in that situation, or if you don't think that there's any way you can do that, that it's all about you, you got to cut it off. Okay? You have to swallow some pride and get rid of it. Okay? That's part of that. And then sometimes we may not be able to get rid of that hindrance. It's kind of like the thorn in the side thing that you read in that second thing.
Right.
That God may be like, maybe this can be a good testimony for you, and I can be, as in God, be glorified through that hindrance. Right.
Right.
So showing that, yeah,
exactly.
This person, now just for example, and I'm not trying to make this one all about me either, but just for example, Neil's got a struggle. Just, you know, hypothetical. We all have struggles. Neil's got a struggle. Do I really want to get rid of this struggle, or can it be used in a public way to show that, yes, he's not perfect, nobody is, but through this struggle, and this is like God talking, can be glorified through that as long as he's giving me glory, even in his struggles, just like we all should be doing, right?
Right, exactly.
So you address that situation, and you pray to God about it, just like that. Sometimes you're able to cut it off and move on. Sometimes God may be able to use the craziest situations,
yeah,
craziest in our minds, to be for him, for you to glorify him through it. So yeah, you hit it right on the head. We do need to kind of do some, it's good to check on people back and forth.
Absolutely.
But we also need to check on ourselves, just us and God talking a little bit.
Yeah.
Because in any situation where you got stress piling up left and right, you need to kind of look back and say, okay, what all do I have going on right now? And where is it more about me than it is about God? And if it's more about you, cut it off. Simple as that.
Right.
That's the way I see it. That's basically what I kind of got from,
yeah,
listening to you as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And also plus two, you know, what you were saying too is about, you know, is this hindrance something that, you know, yeah, it's tough, but is it worth getting rid of if I can use it to glorify God?
Right.
And that's something that that's something that I have to think about every day for me, you know, because, you know, obviously, you know, I stutter and I have a hard time talking sometimes depending on the circumstance. Obviously, when it comes to certain conversations, particularly sports, I usually talk too fast to stutter anyway, but you know, but in all reality, you know, it's something that I struggle with on a daily basis. And yeah, there are a lot of times I wish I could be like everybody else and just not have to think about talking all the time. I should just be able to talk without, you know, having to rethink about it.
Sure.
But at the same time, I know that, yeah, it makes me different. And, you know, and I understand that it might be uncomfortable for some people. It's uncomfortable for me sometimes too. But if it's something that I can use to be able to glorify God and to show that, hey, it doesn't matter what circumstances you have, you can overcome those or use those in a good way to help glorify God and help out other people and put your confidence in that, then that can have a really big impact on our people too. So.
Yeah, exactly. Because like you said early on too, you know, we get all of God. We get 100% of God. It's up to us. Like God, I mean, basically, let me rewind. God's giving us all of him, okay?
Right.
Once we let God into our life, it's okay, here's all of me. But it's up to you to weed out the unnecessary things so you can get as much of me as you can.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, yeah, God's given us 100% himself. He's going to show us his grace. He's going to show us his justice. He's going to show us his mercy. He's going to show us all of him.
Right.
But it's up to us to get any kind of weeds. We're just talking about pruning a garden during the break. Because you know, helped me with the garden while I was gone. But it's up to us to take care of that, to get out anything unnecessary so it doesn't hinder us from seeing all of God that we're able to see while we're here on this earth.
Right.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
Absolutely, man. For sure.
I know you kind of said, well, this ain't a really deep one, but it can be deep. It's really good. And it doesn't have to be a long one to be deep either. So, I mean,
right, absolutely.
I mean, this is perfect. And I think all of us need to hear this and, you know, and be reminded of it. So, yeah. Awesome job, Cody.
Well, thank you, man.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate that.
All right, it is sports time. Time to update y'all on the week that was in the world of sports. This is
the weekly score. There you go.
So I'll be honest with you, Cody. Here we go. Rewind. Blah, blah, blah. I did not watch a lick of the All-Star race, okay? Part of that was because I was on vacation. The other part was because of how wacky it was going to be. It was like in six different stages, okay? They like reversed the field, I think, three times. And to be honest with you, I think it might have been more because I didn't get to watch it. But I probably would have been in trouble if, you know, all my family was out having a good time and I stayed at home at the beach house
and watching the All-Star and watched the race. Yeah.
So if you want to get mad at me for being on vacation, you can talk to my family about that. You can take it up with them because I had no part in that at all. Okay? But I will tell you who won the race because it's pretty obvious and it was all over the place.
Yeah.
Okay. If you have not heard, and this is just a hot take. Okay. I shared my hot take with Parrish on Monday. Okay.
Okay.
I think Kyle Larson's going to be a pretty successful cup driver. What do you think?
I think he's going to be pretty good. Yeah.
You don't think that's a stretch?
I don't think that's a big stretch.
Considering that's how many wins for him? Three?
I think during the regular season he has three wins. And then I guess if you include this one, it's four.
Yeah.
But so, yeah.
And another hot take. Rick Hendrick's a pretty good car owner, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean,
I'd say so.
My goodness, dude. Can we just mention just real quick of how dominant they are?
Oh, man, dude. It's been insane.
Larson just, once again, just got out front and never looked back, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, him and his team's $1 million richer because that's what you get in the All-Star race. You get $1 million. And, man, that's really all I can say is, hey, guess what, y'all? Kyle Larson's good at racing.
Yes,
he's,
he is.
He's a really good driver. And he still goes and drives the Outlaws cars, the little bitty dirt cars.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's doing good in there, too, which that's what he did last year when he wasn't in the Cup Series, was driving that. And based on how good he was doing that, people were like, well, he might be pretty good if he gets in the right car. And, yeah, he was.
Yes.
Yeah,
he was. That's one, for sure.
There's one podcast that I listen to, and James and Parrish listen to. It's called Door Bumper Clear.
Yeah.
And I remember at the very beginning of the season, they were talking about all the stuff that might happen and stuff like this. And one of the guys, he's the spotter for Joey Logano, he said, I think Kyle Larson is going to have a tough time with all these new packages in these cars. Oh, no, he has not. Not even
he
close.
He has definitely not at all. So, that's for sure. Kyle Larson's definitely been the best racer so far this season for the Cup Series. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think he's on more fire or on fire more than Harvick and Hamlin were last year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, it's just back. It's just all the time. And if he's not in first, he's in second. I mean, it's just right there each time. It's crazy. And another more win, one more win for Rick Hendrick.
Hendrick.
Now, I don't know if this counts on his win total because it's All-Star race.
Because it's All-Star,
it's not a points race. It's just for the money and bragging rights. But, I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see what happens in the weeks to come. This week, they're at Nashville, which is it's the first time they've been at Nashville Speedway in a long time.
Yeah.
And they got some crazy paint schemes. Kevin Harvick's running a Gravedigger paint scheme, which, you know, the monster truck Gravedigger.
Yeah.
It looks just like the monster truck with his number four on the side. It even says Gravedigger all over it.
Nice.
So it's really cool.
That's
and
really cool.
Actually, my name's going to be on a truck this weekend.
What? Really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
So for a little simple little Father's Day gift, Amber, I told Amber about it, and I thought it was funny, and Parrish showed it to me too. So Chase Briscoe is running a truck in the Truck Series this Friday.
Yes.
So, you know, a lot of Cup drivers, sometimes they'll run in the Xfinity Series, sometimes they might run in the Truck Series, especially at a new track to get a little bit extra practice on the track.
Right.
So Briscoe's running a truck this Friday, and his sponsor is one of the companies that sell the little die-cast cars, you know, the little replicas of the actual race cars.
Uh-huh.
And for $10... you could get your name on the truck bed cover of the racing truck.
Oh, that's cool.
And so Amber handed me a receipt the before we left for Charleston and said, Happy Father's Day. And my name, I don't know how, it'd probably be type 4 font or something like that. But
it's on there.
It's on there. So that'd be cool to say, hey,
that's cool.
My name's on a race car, and I'll definitely have to buy the diecast when it comes out.
Absolutely.
Say, hey, look, there's my name on a racing truck. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, what's going to be funny is you're going to buy the diecast. It's like, yeah, my name's not where? Right?
Let's get in the microscope.
Right, you know, there.
You don't see it right there? Yeah. Uh-huh. It's smaller than the Goodyear writing on the wheels. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's that right there. It's that little bitty blue dot right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought that was funny. But I think it's really awesome, too, because it's not too often for $10 you can have your name on a stock car. Because that usually costs a little bit more. I remember when my dad sold a couple of his hoists to Stuart Haas Racing, we got to go to the race shop. And we got to see them working on, like, Tony Stewart's car, Kevin Harvick's car, stuff like that.
Nice.
Really cool place.
Yeah.
You know? You could eat off the floor in those places. They keep them so clean, you know. And he sold a couple of hoists to one of the engineers. And my dad said, just, you know, just asking, like, how much would it cost to not be on the hood, but just be somewhere on the car? He said, well, how much is your company worth? And dad said, well, we're probably, you know, we're close to, you know, I'd say $10 million company. He said, we wouldn't even call you. They do bigger than that.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's just crazy how much that costs. It don't cost $10 million. He was asking about, like, the worth of the company. And I probably got the number way wrong. I can't remember that.
Right.
But I do specifically remember the guy saying, yeah, we wouldn't even call you for sponsorship. Wow. So, yeah. So, that's just crazy. So that's going to be fun. It'll be fun to see if I can see my name on the truck. I'm sure there'll be pictures of it on Twitter or something like that.
Yeah.
Just a quick little fun brag and thankful to my wife for
absolutely
getting my name on a race car for Father's Day.
That's definitely really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really awesome.
Beep. This is a correction because I was way off on when I said my name would be on a racing truck. It would be on Friday, July 9th at the Knoxville race. You know, they got all them Vils in Tennessee. Anyway,
uh-huh.
So I had Nash and Knox mixed up.
Oh,
so
okay.
My bad. So Friday, July 9th
all them Vils?
At 9 p.m., you can see my name, very small name, on the back of Chase Briscoe's number 04 Ford truck. So there you go.
Awesome. There you go. All right, Neil, let's talk some NBA basketball, dude.
All right.
Well, actually, technically, for this episode, we'll be talking a little bit more about Charlotte Hornets basketball.
Right.
We're going to start off by talking about the Charlotte Hornets and one Mr. LaMelo Ball in particular.
Never heard of him. I'm just kidding.
I was about to say. So, he won the NBA Rookie of the Year Award this year.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was announced yesterday on Wednesday.
It was announced on Wednesday that LaMelo Ball won the 2021 NBA Rookie of the Year Award. And to be honest, it's not that I think he could win. I was just wondering if he had a big enough sample size because he got hurt and he was out for like a third of the season.
Yep.
I was wondering if that would affect it or not.
Yeah,
I guess not. In the eyes of the voters, I guess they didn't think about that at all. They were just like, okay, yeah, whatever. We like him.
In case you didn't see it, I think Bleacher Report loves him. Because
they absolutely love him on Bleacher Report.
Anytime you had a chance, if you follow Bleacher Report on Twitter,
yes,
especially during the regular season, it was LaMelo, the LaMelo show on Bleacher
Report. It was
Report.
Pretty much
just like it was the Zion show last year on Bleacher Report. They just pick a rookie and go with it.
I mean, well, like, I guess to me that was what was so funny is because, like, last season it was all about Zion, and then this year's all about LaMelo, and then Zion's just over here like, hey guys, what about me?
What happened to me? Yeah, and it's, probably next year they'll move on from LaMelo, but
it's
just one of those
probably
things.
So and go on to
who else is really good. And you couldn't deny the stats that he had.
No, not at all.
There was only one stat in all rookies that he didn't lead in, and Anthony Edwards led another one.
And that was points.
Points. Overall, just total.
And that was
points.
I got a picture right here.
Yeah,
look.
There you go. Yeah.
I got the stats right here, or the stat leaders for rookies. Points goes to Anthony Edwards. Assists, Ball. Rebounds, Ball. Steals, Ball. Field goal percentage, Ball. 3-point percentage, 2-point percentage, free throw percent. I mean, I can go on and on.
Yeah,
it's all LaMelo.
It's everything but overall total points because he didn't play as many games. Right.
Right, of course.
Yeah. So you can't deny that. I mean, you can't look past that and say, yeah, he wasn't rookie. Yes, he was.
Yes.
100%.
Yes, he was.
And
plus, you could actually see a big change in the overall team with LaMelo because, I mean, to be honest, I mean, yeah, Anthony Edwards was good, but he really didn't help the team as far as get more wins goes. You know,
oh, yeah. You could tell.
Because they still have one of the worst records in the NBA.
Yeah, and we mentioned it on here, too. You could tell the increase in energy when LaMelo was on the court with the whole team. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially him and Miles Bridges
connection. And Miles Bridges connection,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's called Airbnb.
Yeah,
Airbnb. So, I mean, and, you know, the Timberwolves Twitter account, was they were a little petty yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
Did you see the thing I tweeted back at them?
I did, yeah.
So
that was
pretty
funny.
All the Timberwolves said was LOL. That's all they – as soon as the news came out, the Timberwolves Twitter literally just tweeted LOL.
Some tells me that was started by – I think you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably so.
Yes, but chances are he started that.
Probably so. And you talking about, golly, I just lost his name. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah.
But,
I can think of his name off the bat here. Wait.
No, don't pause it. We're going to keep this.
Okay.
D'Angelo Russell.
D'Angelo Russell. There you go. So he was about to say, something tells me that was all started by D'Angelo Russell.
Since he hacked on there and tweeted LOL, I replied with a GIF of a WWE wrestler. His name is Baron Corbin, in case you didn't know. And if you don't know who he is, it doesn't really matter. But I remember him saying this on an episode of SmackDown, and he's saying it on this GIF. It says, "I'll buy a boat and float down the river of your tears." So get over it, basically. Yeah. So cry me a river, LaMelo Ball, Rookie of the Year, mic drop.
Let's go. Absolutely, yes, for sure. But also talking about the Charlotte Hornets with their Rookie of the Year in LaMelo Ball, one of the biggest things, obviously, during the regular season and, you know, during a couple episodes during the regular season, me and you talked about this, was the fact that the Hornets need a big man.
Yes.
They really do need a really solid big man up there, because as far as big men go, we're probably in the lowest, one of the worst in the NBA as far as consistent play from a big man. Like, probably the best big man that we had was Cody Zoeller. We played PJ in center, and, you know, he was decent. Mm-hmm. You know, and then obviously, you know, you got Biyombo, and that's its own animal.
We don't cuss on this podcast, Cody.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I'm sorry. Forgive me about that. But anyway, I think it's fair to say the Hornets' play at the big man position, at center position, was definitely lackluster, at least compared to other teams in the NBA, because a lot of teams scored points in the paint off of us. It seemed like every game, teams, like a couple players would have double digit points in the paint, like no more than one guy. Like, what was funny is I remember, I can't remember if it was the first game or second game of the season, and we played against Milwaukee, and Giannis had like 30 points, but they were all like dunks. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, big deal. You can do a dunk. You're like 6'10", 6'11". Of course you can do a dunk. You know, because our points in the paint defense is, you know, wasn't that great.
Yeah. Speaking of Giannis, we're 41 minutes into this podcast, and he still hasn't shot his free throw yet.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I know. Like, just a quick side note. Why does he take so long?
No, it does not.
You guys must say, why does he take so long to shoot the free throw?
I'm sorry I got us off topic, but
no, it's fine. It was just something I was just thinking about.
There's no reason why it should take you 10 seconds to shoot a free
throw.
No. Not even 5 seconds.
Well, what was funny, though, is when they added, like, the free throw timer at the bottom of the screen, and they would add the free throw timer for Giannis, that was hilarious.
That's when you know you got a problem.
Yes. Yeah, uh-huh. Yes, exactly, for sure. But anyway, going back to the original conversation, you know, obviously the Hornets need a big man for next season, you know, like a more consistent big man, one who doesn't, you know, just get an occasional rebound and scores a few points. You know, someone who can actually be a major contributor to the offense, you know, and obviously play really good paint.
Yeah.
You know, defense as well. And according to this one article, and obviously this is just one article, so it's not like major news, so take this with a grain of salt. But it mentioned a few different center options I thought that were kind of interesting for the Hornets.
Okay.
And one of them was a guy we've already talked about more than once this year, and that was Miles Turner.
Yes.
From the Pacers. I think if the Hornets can
sign him yesterday.
I think if the Hornets could get a deal done with Miles Turner, that would be amazing. Because Miles Turner is definitely, I mean, like, obviously Miles Turner is one of the better centers in the league, but I feel like he goes underrated every year.
Well, it's because of who he plays for, too.
Well, true there, too. But still, I mean, like, everyone talks about him only because, you know, he's consistent.
Yes.
They don't really talk about him as far as, you know, like the superstar. And obviously, you know, he's one of the best, you know, but compared to other guys who get more attention, you know, he doesn't get talked about as much.
Right.
But a guy like him on the Charlotte Hornets, man, that would be amazing if we could get a dude like him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That would be amazing. Some other guy that was mentioned in this article was Jared Allen. Jared Allen used to be on the Nets, and then was traded to Cleveland as part of the James Harden trade. Yep. And that was a very interesting name, I thought, that was brought up in there. And
he's a solid big man.
I was about saying, Jared Allen was a really solid piece, for sure. I mean, like, when he played for Brooklyn, he was amazing. And, you know, obviously the James Harden trade sent him away to Cleveland, which, you know, obviously it's James Harden, so I understand. But, you know, when I heard Brooklyn traded him, I'm like, man, he's a really good player. I mean, like, I was surprised that Brooklyn would be willing to give up someone like him for a James Harden type player. And I understand it was the last year of his contract, so it made sense from a, you know, financial and business standpoint. But still, like, when I heard he got traded, I'm like, dude, Jared Allen's one of the, you know, Jared Allen's a solid.
Absolutely.
You know, really solid over there. And, you know, plus two combined with his play and his big hair, you know, that makes him look even taller, you know, than he is already. You know, so that would already help him in his, you know, paint defense for sure, you know, because you know, players have to jump over his hair to make a dunk. you know, that makes it even harder of a challenge.
There you go.
For sure. But, you know, just a guy like Jared Allen. Jared Allen does have a little bit of attitude issues every now and then, but a lot of NBA players do. So yeah. It's nothing, you know, crazy or anything like that.
Sure.
Plus, having a guy with that kind of temper on the team could contribute to other good things.
It might help. That's right.
Right, exactly. You know, who knows? Yeah, but I thought he was a really good option. And this is one in the article. I just had to mention this because I just don't think this is going to happen at all. And I don't think it should happen, to be honest with you. Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah, no.
That's not a good option.
No,
I do not think
I'm not a fan of that.
I'm not a fan of Kristaps Porzingis as far as an option for the Hornets, especially after he was complaining about he was feeling like, you know, he was like, you
number
know,
two.
You know, like number two. And I'm like, well, one, it's because you are number
exactly.
two.
Exactly.
Because Luke is the best guy on that team.
Yes.
But also, I just don't think he's proven enough in the last couple of years to even warrant a really big deal like that.
Yeah.
Especially for a team like Charlotte because, you know, the Hornets already have a big deal with Gordon Hayward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and plus, too, as far as future contracts, you know, with guys like P.J. Washington or Miles Bridges or Terry Rozier after his contract runs up after next season. So, I mean, you know, we got future contracts we got to think about, and I just don't think a guy like Porzingis is worth giving a lot of money for when we already have money tied up already into guys like Gordon Hayward, but two, you know, future contracts for guys like Miles Bridges, PJ, and other players like that.
And eventually we're going to sign LaMelo to a non-rookie deal.
That's something
you need to think about.
I was about to say, that's also something that you got to think about too, and that's going to be a big deal.
Yep.
You know, like, I'm just saying that if he keeps playing at the rate he played his rookie year, and you just make that even better. Yeah, like that combined with the other contracts you want to keep the core of the team around, it's definitely going to be a lot of financial. So Porzingis, this doesn't make sense.
Well, if he's jealous, and I'm not saying that Charlotte has like a numerous amount of superstars by any means.
Right.
But if he's jealous of just Luka in Dallas, he's going to be jealous of LaMelo. He's going to be jealous of Miles. He's going to be jealous of Terry. Because those three guys.
Devontae Graham,
because he's a fan favorite too.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, LaMelo is probably the face of the Hornets right now.
Well,
honestly, rookie of the year.
Yes,
standout player. He's got a really bright future ahead of him as long as things work out well.
Yeah.
But I mean, we even got role players that, I mean, just when you think of the Hornets, you think of them, you know?
Right, exactly.
And so, I mean, would you maybe think of Porzingis? Probably. But
in the grand scheme of things,
if he's wanting to be the guy, I don't think Charlotte's the place for him.
Right, exactly.
Because I mean, you know, people didn't really know about him in New York. There's the famous video of the little kid booing him when he got picked. And then later on, that kid's wearing a Porzingis jersey, you know, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
And he was semi-successful in New York.
Yeah.
You get down to Dallas, worked out okay, but Luka's just a better basketball player. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, you know.
Well, it's like you said, Charlotte already has their guy and Dallas has their guy. So he'd basically just be going to another here's this guy situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, that combined with just the financial stuff I mentioned earlier, it just doesn't make that much sense from that standpoint to get Porzingis. But I just thought it was funny. Just
I think he's also a little jealous of Jokic over in Denver too, because
Jokic. Yeah,
I mean he's the MVP. You know.
Yeah.
And he's got his brothers that always have his back, just like Porzingis does, stuff like that. So it's almost like he's just kind of
off on his own. Yeah.
So I don't think Porzingis would be a good investment.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
No.
And
speaking of.
Former Hornets players, you saw where Kemba and Boston are going to part ways.
Yes, I did see that.
And, you know, I'm not saying this as trying to be like a troll or trying to be petty or disrespectful. I'm not saying that at all, but just maybe not always the grass is greener. You know, sometimes they say the grass is always greener. Maybe not. Yeah, was he on a good team? Yeah, pretty good team. For him and for them on paper, they looked really good. Sometimes it worked out on the court. And they got some front office issues that are just really awkward right now.
Well,
not many people know what's going on up there. But, yeah, looks like he'll be in a different uniform next year.
And, yeah, it seems like
it. You know, maybe this was just a little humbling season for him to, you know, because he was Mr. Big Shot with the Hornets. He was the Hornets for a long time. He was the Bobcats, too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But maybe this was just a thing to say, hey, maybe I just need to sit back and address myself like we were talking about earlier.
Well, plus two, and this was something I was thinking about, you know, when he was part of that sign and trade deal with Terry, was that, you know, when he was with Charlotte, he was the man.
Right.
When you go to Boston, you are with a bunch of guys who are the man.
Yeah.
You know, like
big fish, small pond down here.
Right, for sure. You know, like he was a big fish in a small pond in Charlotte, and now he's a big fish in an even bigger pond when he went to Boston, you know, because, you know, it was him, you know, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there were a lot of really talented players up there, so he couldn't just be the guy anymore. Right. And I think that combined with, you know, like you said, all the front office issues that Boston has, it just didn't end up working out the way they were hoping it for.
Yeah, so we'll see where he ends up, too. I'm interested to see that.
Yes, I am, too. Absolutely.
All right, Cody, so let's talk a little bit of baseball. We've already mentioned the Braves and Red Sox, and Red Sox just whooping up on my Bravos this past week. But we got some sticky situations going on. And before you talk, let me rub my palm real quick so I can grip this microphone better. Okay. So we got some cheaters going on. Well, speculated.
Yes.
Alleged cheaters.
Yeah, I was about to say, apparently it's not official yet.
Well, it's pretty official from what I see on my television.
Well, I guess it depends on who you ask.
Okay.
Yeah, I was about to say, I guess it depends on who you ask about this, but we continue the up and down soap opera roller coaster ride known as Major League Baseball. Well, because like last year it was funny because we had like something new every week to talk about as far as like the developments of the season, but now we're going to be talking about something else involving Major League Baseball, and that is the new foreign substance policy that they enforced this past weekend.
Uh-huh.
Or they're going to enforce for this upcoming week, but they mentioned that they were going to be starting it this past weekend, first part of this week. So basically the foreign substance policy, because here recently there has been an increase in pitchers' spin rate on their pitches. Because, you know, they can measure that, you know. So there's been an increase in spin rate. And for those of you who don't know what that means, basically the faster or the bigger a spin rate is, the more break or movement a pitch has when it is thrown. Plus that combined with the fact that the batting average for hitters is a league-wide .237 now.
Compared to last year, is crazy.
I was about to say, you know, which compared to last year is really crazy. And I think they said this is the lowest league batting average since like 1968 or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, forever ago. But to save time and kind of make a long story short, the MLB announced this new foreign substance policy saying that if they catch any offenders who have foreign substances, and this is for all players, so pitchers, catchers, position players, whatever. If they catch a foreign substance on your glove, they can toss you out of the game and you can be suspended for 10 games.
Whoa.
At least. You can be suspended for 10 games, and then if you repeat offender, then further discipline will obviously be enforced then, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if you're caught, then you can be suspended for 10 games, and this is something I thought that was very interesting. You cannot replace that roster spot on your roster. So if one of your...
So if you suffer, the team suffers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
So, and that was something I thought was very interesting, you know. It's not the same as an injury, you know, because if someone gets hurt, you know, you can call someone up, you know, from the minor leagues or whatever, you know, take their spot until they get back. But under this new policy, if a player gets caught and is suspended for having a foreign substance either on their glove or on their person or whatever, they're suspended for 10 games and the team cannot make any roster changes to bring back that player.
Wow.
So if one of your pitchers is caught with a foreign substance and he's suspended for 10 games, you can't call up another pitcher from the AAA to take his spot. You're just stuck with one less pitcher for a week and a half.
Interesting.
And I thought that was very interesting, yes, for sure. But also combined with the fact that, you know, that's obviously different, but just I have a few complaints about this.
Okay.
I don't have a complaint about the policy itself. I think that policy's fine.
Right.
I just think that the way they're going to go about doing it is going to be really weird, because how they're going to do it is they're going to have multiple random checks throughout the game.
Oh, no.
So, you know, which is funny because everyone's talking about pace of play. And that's like a big thing in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And that's going to slow down pace of play. So, you know,
is the umpire going to do it like randomly, or do they have to do it like three times in a game?
As far as like a number, they didn't say like a specific number. They just said it was going to be multiple checks throughout the game by the umpires. They're going to check pitchers, gloves, catchers, position players, and all that. They're going to go check their gloves, check their person or whatever. And if they find something they don't like, they can obviously toss the player and do the punishment. Mm-hmm. Like I just mentioned earlier, they can get suspended and things like that. But like I said, I don't have a problem with the policy itself, but I don't like the method of I mean, I don't mind the Ram checking throughout the game. I think that's okay. But what I'm saying is that you guys are like all talking about pace of play and adding all these different weird rules to make pace of play or the pace of the game speed up or just the amount of time the game takes go slower. You know, obviously this year with the addition of the runner at second for extra innings like we had last year, that was kept in. That was, you know, that's, you know, plus all the other stuff that they've added in recent years. But then you add something like this, which is going to make the game go by longer, and then it kind of ruins the point of the other rules that you added in. You know, so just from a pace of play standpoint, it's kind of weird. Like I said, I don't mind the rule because I'm not a big pace of play guy.
Yeah, I see your point, and I agree that it's a pain. But it's a pain because we've had people take advantage
of
limitations, of not being too strict on that so far
absolutely.
This year.
Yes.
So when you have numerous people doing that, they got to do something that's got to
be
aggravating. Until
but like, as far as the rule itself, like I understand that, absolutely.
Yeah. And when it's not a problem anymore, they'll probably not do that as often, okay?
Right.
But right now, left and right on Twitter, on TikTok, on Facebook, on any social media, you see where people are breaking down frame by frame.
Where
pitchers are rubbing the inside of their glove, or even catchers are rubbing the inside of their glove before they throw the ball back.
Yeah.
And you know what? I never thought about it, but you know, when they throw the ball around the infield, somebody on a position player could have it on their glove, you know,
right.
And just happen to rub it, catch it, and throw it back to the pitcher, and maybe somehow that would give them an advantage. But I mean, you have numerous people, and I'm not going to say any particular names just because there's been a lot of them, unfortunately, that are using that, okay? And because so many are doing it, they're going to have to be strict. They're going to have to be a pain in the rear about this for a little while. Because, I mean,
yeah, for sure, absolutely.
When you have people taking advantage or going a little too far, they have to draw back like this and be strict for a little while.
Right. And that's obviously something I completely understand, and that makes perfect sense. I don't have any problem with that at all. I guess my biggest critique about this new policy is it was implemented a third into the season.
Yeah.
Like, why was this not implemented in spring training, or at least maybe wait till the end of this season for some reason? You know, just don't do it in the middle of the season.
Right.
I guess that's my biggest thing.
Yeah.
Because
I can see both sides of that.
I mean, like, as far as the policy itself, I mean, obviously, like you said, it's a growing issue and it needs to be dealt with. And I understand that. And I think the fact that they implemented something is, you know, obviously really good, and I think they should have done it as soon as possible.
Yeah.
I think waiting until the off season is a bad idea because that gives you the whole season to do something like that, and, you know, that would have made the problem worse.
Right.
So I understand doing it. I just wish it maybe would have happened a little bit earlier instead of it being a third into the season, because now players who were doing it, I mean, obviously it's, you know, their own choice to whether they used it or not. So, you know, they got to, you know, deal with the consequences of that, and that's fine. But I guess it's just like, you know, pitchers are going to have to change their routine. So just maybe for the next few weeks, don't expect the greatest baseball to be played.
Right.
Or at least compared to what we've seen for the first part of the season. Mm-hmm. Don't expect as good of breaks on pitches or hitters to do as great, because now we're going to have a kind of a readjustment period for everybody. As far as all that stuff goes, I just think this whole thing is very interesting, just because of that. But
just aggravating.
I'm glad they added the policy in. It's just kind of aggravating that you know, it's in the middle of the season. It kind of interrupts the flow of the season, and all that. But as far as the policy itself, I don't mind it at all. I don't mind the policy. Obviously, some players have their issues with it, but you know, that's just the way it goes in Major League Baseball for sure. And one thing I wanted to mention, and this is just something I wanted to get your opinion on, this is Rays pitcher Tyler Glasnow. After his last start, it was revealed he had a partially torn UCL, and he's going to probably be out until the playoffs start.
That's Tommy John, isn't it?
I was about to say, which could be Tommy John surgery. Yeah. They haven't said exactly, like, as of this recording, they haven't said that he's going to have Tommy John surgery or not. They said they're looking to avoid it, which that doesn't sound good, obviously. But, I mean, you know, that wasn't good. So after that was announced, he had a press conference, and he has obviously said a few choice words.
That's him.
During his press conference. Yeah. But, you know, he obviously said a few choice words during his press conference. But basically his point was, and like I said, this is just him saying it, like, not saying I agree or disagree with what he's saying. This is just what he said. He basically said that he didn't say it up front, but he definitely insinuated that this new policy is what caused him to get hurt.
Really?
Because what he said is, I've thrown, you know, 70, 80 innings this year with a combination of rosin and sunscreen, which is what he says, which is what he usually does. And both of those aren't foreign substances, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, and this past start against the Washington Nationals, he went out with nothing on purpose just to say, okay, hey, I'm pitching without anything, so y'all don't got to worry about me. And then after that start, that next day, he was feeling sore in places he didn't feel sore before.
Really?
And after that, it was revealed he had a partially torn UCL. Hmm. And one of the things he was saying was, because I'm going out there with nothing, I'm having to grip the ball
even harder
and differently than I have my whole life. So I'm using muscles I haven't had to use before, or as much as I had to use them at least, because of the way I went about pitching before.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I went out with nothing, that changed changed the whole way I pitched. And now he has a torn UCL, or a partially torn UCL, which could lead to Tommy John surgery. We don't know yet. But
well, he's got a point.
But I just thought that was very interesting, though. Yeah. I mean, but well, like I said, I agree with the policy. But like I said, the fact this is in the middle of the season, and especially the last couple weeks, because it was all speculative if a policy was even going to be added, pitchers were just like, okay, I'm not going to use anything just to prove a point.
Yeah.
Or just to let y'all know, okay, hey, I'm not using foreign substances, just to let you guys know, so y'all don't got to suspend me. And then when something like that happens, it's like, ooh.
Yeah. They need to make sure that, you know, that they still allow...
He's going
to
give a good look,
that
is
they,
what I'm
that
saying.
They still allow sunscreen and rosin. Because, I mean...
Right.
I mean, if you don't allow sunscreen, especially on day games... And
that's rough.
Well, you got a whole nother lawsuit waiting on you later on if players start getting, like, skin cancer a lot.
Right.
Because, I mean, just think of they're out there in the middle of the day playing baseball for 3-4 hours. You know? So, I mean...
Well, but that was my main concern when I was hearing Tyler Glass now. I'm like, okay, if this is requiring Tommy John surgery... And his career goes down the tank after this, you know, because, you know, you don't ever know what's going to happen with Tommy John. You know, when some players have it.
You have to learn how to pitch again. Yeah.
Right, exactly. You know, when some players have Tommy John, they come back and throw even harder and even better than they did before. And others, it just ruins their career.
Right.
So, if Tyler Glass now comes back, potentially after Tommy John surgery, and he doesn't pitch the same as he used to anymore, that ain't going to be a good look.
That's not a good look.
I mean, that's not a good look. And that's not his fault or Major League Baseball's fault. It was just, you know, in my opinion, it was just the circumstances that happened.
That's right.
But I just thought that was kind of interesting, you know, just because of all that going on. And, you know, like I said, this is just Major League Baseball at its finest. Mm-hmm. Just with stuff going on, you don't ever know what's going to happen every day.
Yeah.
So, you know, but like I said, to kind of summarize, as far as the policy itself, I don't mind it at all. Like, I think it's needed because I think, well, like you said, pitchers are, and just players in general are taking advantage of this, especially this year.
Right.
Well, especially, too, with this new hitting philosophy that's across Major League Baseball. It's all about the launch angle
gripping
and the home run.
It. Yep.
And, yeah, gripping and rip it style hitting. You have even more break on those pitches. That type of hitting philosophy is going to be even harder to, you know, do because there's that much more of an advantage going on. Now, obviously, foreign substance I'm sure have been used more than just this year.
Yeah.
But I think now it's just more excessive than it has been because, like you said, of the lack of really looking into it. And I think now with this policy, I think players and teams alike are going to definitely... I mean, yeah, it's aggravating. It's going to take some getting used to. But I like that they're trying to enforce it.
Yeah. It'll take some tweaking just like everything else.
It'll definitely take some tweaking. But I like that. And I guess it's just a matter of getting through the season without having any other major issues as far as injuries and all that's concerned. I just think that, you know, I thought it was a very interesting point. And, of course, it's Major League Baseball being Major League Baseball. So I thought it was very interesting to talk about for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. That's for sure. Well, cool deal, man. Well, we had some really good talking points today. As we close out, I'll let you do this week's Minor League Baseball Team of the Week.
All right, man. That sounds good. This week's Minor League Baseball Team of the Week is, I'm stalling as I'm trying to find it, is the Greensboro Grasshoppers.
Yep.
They are obviously playing in Greensboro, North Carolina, for those of you who didn't know. And they are the High A affiliate of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And they have been with the Pittsburgh Pirates since 2019. They have been a team since 1979.
Yeah, they've been around for a while.
You know, they've definitely been around for a pretty long time, that's for sure. They have won 4 league titles in their past, with the latest being in 2011. And they have been called the Greensboro Grasshoppers since 2005. They've had other different names, such as the Greensboro Bats from 1994 to 2004. The Greensboro Hornets.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
You know, because now we got the Greensboro Swarm.
That's right.
As the, you know,
the G League team.
Yeah, G League team. And they were that from 1979 to 1993. So I thought that was kind of interesting that,
yeah,
you know, they've had different names like that. Their main colors are green, orange, black, and ECRU. How do you say that?
I don't know.
Say it, it's like a tannish white.
Okay. Beige.
Yes.
We'll say beige. Or khaki.
A beige or khaki color, yes. So we'll just say that. So green, orange, khaki, and black. We'll say that. Their mascot is Guilford Grasshopper, mm-hmm. which makes sense. You
Guilford
know,
County. Yeah,
uh-huh. Guilford County. Their ballpark is First National Bank Field, which they've been in since 2005. They were actually at World War Memorial Stadium from 1979 to 2004. They are owned by Greensboro Baseball LLC.
Okay.
You know, so they're owned by their own independent company.
Which is a good thing.
Which is definitely
probably
a good
why
thing.
They've been around since the 70s.
Probably so. Their general manager is Donald Moore, and their manager is Miguel Perez.
Sweet.
So that is the Greensboro Grasshoppers. And just to let you know, this is something I thought was interesting. One of the more famous members who used to play for Greensboro Grasshoppers is one Mr. Mariano Rivera.
Cool.
He used to play for Greensboro Grasshoppers when they were part of the Yankees.
That's pretty cool.
When they were part of the Yankees organization in the 1980s.
Cool deal.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool to see, you know, North Carolina has a lot of cool things, but it has a lot of minor league teams.
It has a lot of minor league teams, North Carolina.
Cool to look back and see all the cool minor league teams that are in the state, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, cool deal, man. Well, I really enjoyed this week's episode.
I did too, man.
It's bittersweet, but I'm looking forward to kind of reflecting and have a good finale next week.
Yes, I am
and
too.
And so I hope y'all tune in for that as well. But y'all have a great rest of your week. Well, I guess a great weekend. This is coming out on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then we will see y'all next time. Bye.